Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Ari White, a young man who has two companies, Gut Chont Inc. and its subsidiary, Gemstone Caterers. Good evening, Ari.
Chodesh Tov, Chaim. Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
Chodesh Tov. Okay, so if I understand right, you hail from El Paso. You went to IU. How did you end up with food?
That's, I guess, a great question. Needless to say, in El Paso, Texas, we were are a bit shy on kosher restaurants. And my mother thought it very important that each of us, I have two brothers, that we each learn to cook. And so always did. With that said, I went to YU and business school, and funny enough, after the, even my first semester within the school, hated the food they served in the cafeteria and kind of used
Hey,
that
I went to that cafeteria. Come on. I went to IU also.
Sure,
the food wasn't
sure
just horrible,
much,
it was
sure
actually
much
terrible.
Better now. I'm sure it's much better now. But back in my day, which was back a little while, not so much.
In my day,
and
for some strange reason, it was only good on Sundays when the parents would visit.
Or the Shabbos soup, which was all of the other soups from the entire week brought together, beyachad. It was interesting times. But with that said, moved into an apartment for no other reason than to be able to cook for myself, and really always had a passion for cooking and for food. And it took me about 4 or 5 years after graduating, working in the corporate world, to realize that it's really what I wanted to do. And with that, opened up a momish, the tiniest little hole-in-the-wall restaurant right across from YU, at the time called Ari's Kosher Deli. It was 6 by 16 feet, nothing but a deep fryer, a deli slicer, small fridge, and an awful lot of love, and that was our humble beginning. So many years later, here we are.
Well, I don't know if that little restaurant truly was a gourmet restaurant, but I have tasted your stuff, both under Gut Chont and under Gemstone Catering, and it definitely is gourmet fare. Okay, so after 4 or 5 years in the corporate world, you decided you wanted to come back to the food world. Okay. How did that start out? How did that evolve to become what it is today?
So initially, going back to the thoughts of, you know, you have all of these Yidden up by YU in Washington Heights, the northern part of Manhattan, and a bunch of hungry boys, and not so many options back then. Again, now there's a huge array of fantastic restaurants up there, Golan Heights and Chop and Lake Como, and, you know, 5 or 6 places. Back then, it wasn't so much. There was only 2. And so we took a bodega lottery stand, and converted it. And the Shabbos just before our very first opening, our grand opening, so to speak, at the time, my wife and I lived in Manhattan's Upper East Side and davened at a wonderful little shul there called Or HaChaim. And
I know where that is.
I have to say, as a slight side note, my wife at the time, a very militant vegetarian, and having been married to a militant vegetarian for so long, I feel like I had been slightly deprived of good flesh So when that very first meat order came in for the deli, talking 20 boxes of everything you can imagine, corned beef and tongues and turkeys and pastrami's and salamis, I was beyond excited and asked Rav Schmidman, asked if we would be able to make a small kiddush for the shul, kind of as to get off on the right foot. And so he let us. We were under the Bada Riverdale at the time, and we made a kiddush. And I making cholins for mass amounts of people was nothing new. Back home in El Paso, my mother was always very involved in all of the shul kiddushim and was very happy to employ child labor, forcing us to help. And what was kind of amazing is that I suppose it was very well received. And from that, we were hired for another kiddush to do the Chatanim kiddush after Shabbos Bereishis. So I guess in an odd sort of way, we actually started catering before even opening the deli. But over the coming years, the shul really opened up their kitchen on the Shavas Keys, and a budding catering company started to incubate, if you will. And over the years, the catering just really overgrew the deli. And so years later, the deli was closed, and we went into catering full-time.
I noticed that you have 12 different types of cholent. Now, I can understand some of them. Coming from Texas, I understand you would have your Texas cholent. I understand your Bobby's Polish cholent. I would even understand Moroccan dafina, which to me is the best cholent I have ever tasted, even if I am an Ashkenazi. I'm from Polish parentage myself. Then, of course, being a South American, I understand your Mexican enchilenta. But where'd you get some of the other stuff? Like, where'd you learn about Syrian and the Sephardi Hameen and the Irish leper's pie and the French Chaudelaine and so on?
So growing up, my brothers and I would always fight over who got to make cholents for Shabbos in Texas, where it's really very, very hot. The cholent rule is that we only get to make cholent in months with R in them. So May, June, July, August, you know, when it's 110 degrees outside, cholent is not even in the on any menus. At that point, we're all about gazpacho. But when I came up to YU, I certainly had my Texas cholent as the cholent that I knew. And again, going back to the apartment, it was an opportunity to have a lot of friends come over, and very often, you know, definitely friends with a lot of the Syrian guys, and everybody sort of would bring, I suppose, their own childhood to the Shabbos table, and that was the beginning of my external cultural influences. And from there, it's just, I guess, with a little bit of creativity, research, and sometimes just plain old fun, our cholent list has expanded. I can't tell you if any Yidden in Ireland actually make an Irish shepherd's pie. We call ours our shepherd's pie. I don't know.
He says a shepherd's pie, right?
I've never spent a Shabbos in France and had a cassoulet like we make it. Even though cholent, which is hot and low, hot and slow, in French, is the most likely origin of the name cholent in the first place. But the list has slowly grown on. The one of the phenomenal Hameens that was a recipe that I got from a fourth generation Yushalmi whose Shabbos table I found myself at, and after a single bite of hers, I wouldn't leave before she gave me the recipe, even if it meant taking her grandchildren as hostage.
First of all, I see that you have Jachnun in that Sephardi Hamin. Personally, yes. Ashkenazi as I may be, from Polish parents as I am, I cannot see myself sitting down to a civilized chont today without having some Jachnun. I mean, I discovered Jachnun, that's it. I can't possibly eat chont without it.
Yeah. Amazing. Jachnun being one of those funny things that people buy in frozen, only
right.
to take out of a freezer thinking they're going to make it for dinner, turn over the box and it says, you know, put in the oven, you know, set temperature, and then cook for 12 hours. And,
right.
And they have to change their dinner plans very quickly. But, it's exciting. You know, I think back one of a very, very dear friend, actually an old friend from school, John Nussbaum, married a beautiful, wonderful Italian girl. And when their baby, their first baby girl was born, her parents and family came in from the Tuscan region, from Tuscany in Italy. And they were looking, you know, we were going to do the Kiddush for them. And the new grandmother pulled me aside and said, I'd love to do it, but you have to make my cholent. And it was an Italian version called stufato, fat stew. And so that just added another one to our repertoire. Amazing in its simplicity. I thought, oh, it's Italian cooking, no problem. Tons of oregano and garlic and bay leaves and thyme and she was like, no, that's how Americans cook Italian food. In Italy, especially in the Tuscan region, it's all about simplicity. And
absolutely.
And hers is just spiced meatballs and Roma tomatoes and bay leaf and a little salt and pepper. So that was it. And I guess kind of the amazing thing about cholent and something that to this day still fascinates me is it's one of those dishes that immediately makes people think of home, because
absolutely.
Everybody's family has their cholent recipe.
It's
and
Jewish comfort
down.
Food, let's face it.
Yeah, listen, they call New York the original boiling pot and melting pot, and
right.
And the fact of the matter is cholent is really the original melting pot. It's all about taking everything you have in your life and putting it together under extreme heat pressure with a little bit of patience and time. And what comes out is mamish magical.
Absolutely.
It's, Shabbos in a bowl. It's, So with that said, it's been a massive passion cooking for Shabbos, and was certainly how our catering company began.
Well, I remember when I saw you at the Kosher Food and Wine Experience 2011, the first time you showed up at the show. It was also, I believe, the official debut of your Gemstone Catering Company.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed by the presentation. And my first reaction was, okay, so it looks great. What does it taste like? Wow, the taste blew me away. Nothing like I ever expected. Considering some of the other so-called famous catering companies, you guys were incredible. Not only did you make it look good, it actually tasted good. Isn't that against the law?
Against the law. So it's certainly an important lesson to remember that we eat with our eyes first. And
absolutely.
While I would say that presentation must always be secondary to the taste, because what good is something if it looks beautiful and then tastes awful?
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing wrong with making something as beautiful to look at as it is to eat. And
Brillat-Savarin said, the first thing that entices us to eat something we haven't touched before is the way it looks. The second thing that entices us is the way it smells. And only 3% of the total experience is the actual taste. Obviously, that's only the first time. Because if I didn't like the taste the first time, I am not touching it again. But you have to get me first with the presentation and with the aroma before I'll even deign taste it.
Yeah, well, now, in the grand scheme, good food is gonna smell good. It's one of the it's actually the only sense that lacks an intermediary. We see with our eyes,
that's
but
right.
They have to be processed. We feel with our fingers and our skin, but it has to go through a nervous system, and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. The smell goes straight through the olfactory glands, which is directly to the brain, and
right.
And yes, it's funny, you know, I very rarely get to actually make cholent at home, even though we send it out to thousands of people every Shabbos, for the sole reason that going back to my beautiful vegetarian wife, if I have cholent cooking in the morning, before any modani, I get the smell of Shabbos, you know, straight to the brain. And for a vegetarian, it's like waking up in prison because there's nowhere she can run to.
Ouch.
She can walk out the front door, down the stairs, around the block, and it's still my challenge.
Let's be fair. Are you trying to tell me that when you're cooking, you don't taste any of this stuff? Come on.
Oh, no. We taste everything. I wouldn't send anything out that I haven't checked out myself. A, very important on sheer quality control, and even more importantly, when it comes to seasoning, a very important lesson to every cook, chef, aspiring foodie out there, season until the last moment, because even when you think that you've seasoned enough and then you put it in the refrigerator or set it aside, it can be pasta, it can be potatoes. When it's actually time to eat, it can be different. These things can be absorbed.
That's correct.
Or released. So, yes. And on top of that, it's probably what got me into the kitchen in the first place. I can remember before being able to see over the counters that when Hank Rothschild came over to carve turkeys, my father always loved smoking turkeys, especially, you know, on quote-unquote special occasions. And
mm-hmm.
they call over a good friend, Hank, who taught me to carve my turkey. And I knew that if I went in and helped in the kitchen, it meant that I would get to snack before everybody else gets to eat. So noshing while we work is very highly recommended. I'd even say mandatory in my kitchens. So, yeah. Not eating has never been a problem for me.
I understand. And yet you're skinny. You're okay. You're not overweight like some chefs.
You know, they say don't trust a skinny chef, but in my line of work, which is half of that time is in the kitchen and the other half loading trucks and going offside and setting up spaces, it's a physically grueling and demanding job.
And you get
job.
To burn a lot of calories.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, I don't need a gym pass. You know, potatoes come
put it this way. I understand you perfectly. Because my generation, we used to eat gribenes, which any cardiologist listening to this will tell you, how could you? That stuff is instant suicide. We used to eat all this food that anybody today looking at health food would be horrified. And yet, there was a lot less obesity.
there was a lot less disease, and we all ended up quite well. Why? Because we did not sit at the computers 24 hours a day like people sit today.
Right.
We didn't drive when we had to walk three blocks. We actually walked.
Right.
I guess that's becoming a forgotten art. Now, enough about me and my generation. I am sure that during your years in food, you must have come across some funny episodes. Care to tell us some of them?
Wow. Funny episodes. I almost wouldn't even know where to begin. probably one of the most challenging jobs we've ever had was catering a vegetarian milchig Shabbos, that being dinner, kiddush, and lunch for about 250 people on Fire Island. If you're at all familiar with this, it's off.
Yes,
like
I know what that is.
Past Long Island, and there are no roads to get there. Even once there are no cars, there are no streets. We set up an Eruv around the shul to be able to house everything. On our way in, there were torrential storms. The water taxis that they had hired for us to bring all the food over, it was too choppy, so we couldn't even make it. We had to bribe our way onto a passenger boat just to get the food there. The entire time I'm having a heart attack thinking there are going to be mamish 200 people there, stranded with absolutely nothing to eat. And even once there, it's not like these are shows that have commercial kitchens. So we converted an outdoor shower house into a dishwashing station. It was, let's just say this job has definitely brought us into a very colorful number of different locations. But, yeah, you know, juxtapose that to the OU having I know you wanted funny and cheerful, so maybe Yom HaShoah not being so much, but the Italian consulate wanted to honor the OU and a number of Rabbanim, and so actually we were hired to cater a meal there, and I never thought in a million years that I would spend Yom HaShoah serving Glatt kosher, Chal of Yisrael food to archbishops and cardinals alongside Rabbanim. It was hands down, you know, one of the most confusing and ironic moments possibly of my entire culinary career. But again, it's one of the exciting parts of this job is that really, mamish, every day brings us to a new place, dealing with new people, and it's exciting. Definitely never a dull moment.
I am looking at the gallery on your website, by the way. Want to give us the URL of your website?
Sure. People, if they want to look us up, can go straight to www.gotcholent.com, G-O-T-C-H-O-L-E-N-T. gotcholent.com, and we have a ton of menus and pictures and contact information and reviews, press, everything, so a fun read.
I am looking at the gallery, and the first picture that came up was a seared tuna.
Mm.
Now, I have had seared tuna at quite a few places. By the way, yours look. Okay, what size party do I have to get you to come and cater?
So in general, when going off-site, we do parties as small as 20 people. And from there, the sky's the limit. I run out of dishes at about 1,000. With that said, that tuna recipe is actually online. We posted that a year ago on a website known as Joy of Kosher. And anybody who wants that, I think that we did that just before Shavuos, it being a very appropriate time. But I can tell you that the secret, I hope that my chef, my executive chef, Chef Andrew Blackman, doesn't murder me for sharing this to the public. But the secret, aside from being really the best quality ahi tuna, you know, available, is actually after cutting the loin to size, flash freezing it so that before the sear, so that you can really give it a phenomenal crust on the outside while still keeping the center perfectly raw. And the result is as beautiful as it is delicious. But we love our tuna.
What are some of the signature dishes that you do in your catering?
So I am one that loves to go back to my roots, and having grown up as a good old Southern boy, I love my barbecue. And if you scroll through the site, you'll see quite a few very sophisticated grown-up versions of some very Southern classics. But with the help and inspiration from the ever-so-talented Mike Kershevitz of Mike's Bistro, we built an industrial smoker, which I have behind my commissary at the Lincoln Park Jewish Center. And we use that puppy to smoke everything, briskets, ribs. You know, it's funny, here in New York, people think of barbecue, and it means taking, you know, a bottle of barbecue sauce, putting it on your chicken before putting it in the oven.
Right.
Down south, barbecue doesn't even mean al ha'esh, it's not even a grill. It really requires fire and smoke. And in an attempt to, I don't want to use the word educate, that could come across completely obnoxiously, but in an attempt to show what real Southern barbecue is all about, it's definitely a style of cooking that comes up time and again in a ton of our menus, from cute little slider bars at bar and bat mitzvahs to some of the fanciest weddings that you can imagine. And I know you're thinking, how can barbecue be fancy? But again, look at some of the pictures. There's one off the top of my head, which is a creamy garlic.
As a South American, I can tell you barbecue can be very, very fancy. We used to call it asado. And a true asado. The way it's done is very, very similar to the way you guys do it in Texas. And I've had it at some of the fanciest simchas. So, yes, done properly, it can be very fancy. You can make it look beautiful, and it tastes incredible.
So, I mean, I can tell you the turkey that we got to smoke at the Kosher Food and Wine experience with Royal Wines that last week was actually a first time. For me, not that a first time smoking turkey, we've smoked thousands of them, but Mr. Herzog was kind enough to ship over 3 Cabernet wine barrels, used barrels, and we actually broke the barrels down with that. You know, they're very much saturated and permeated with the red wine still. And use those American oak wine barrels to smoke the turkeys, with the result being something that was, it was mind-blowing. And really, I like to think very, very
very grown up, as opposed to, you know, again, people think of a smoked turkey and it's going to be, it's not sophisticated. They think processed deli meat with liquid smoke, and once you've eaten the real thing, it's so much, much more.
Absolutely.
I'm getting hungry here already and have a milk.
As a matter
now.
Of fact, just listening to you, I was hungry all along. This is very unfair. I thought I finished dinner. Now I have to go back and eat again. Okay, and this has been a great show. We're just about out of time. Thank you very, very much for coming and talking to us. How do people get in touch with you, by the way?
So, phone number at the office is 917-584-2310. Or we live in an age of computers, so they can Google Gemstone Catering, or even better, come direct to the source and go to the website, which is gotcholent.com. That, by the way,
okay.
Is very important. Very important. That's Cholent with an O. GotCholent.com.
That's right. Not the English way, Cholent. Okay. Okay. Thank you very, very much. You've been a wonderful guest. We're going to have you again. We'd
My
like
pleasure.
To hear some of your recipes. And guten Heidesch.
Guten Heidesch.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And we will be back next week, Wednesday evening, again at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Our guest will be the Cheese Guy. The Cheese Guy is a company that gets cheeses from all over the world. And he'll be telling us about the newest, exciting holy soil cheeses he just brought back from his trip to Europe. In fact, he came back yesterday from a trip to Europe and Eretz Yisrael. Thank you very much, and good night to one and all.